Welcome to the Career Changes podcast, where we believe that it is never too late to redefine your path, rewrite your story, and reignite your passion for what you do. Are you ready for a career-changing adventure? Before we dive into these inspiring stories, we need your support. Hit the subscribe button, leave a review, and join our community of dream chasers. And then, be ready to find your inspiration. Hello, and welcome to a new episode of The Career Changers. Today, our guest is Jack Hem-Cohen, founder and CEO of Dark Knight Ventures, advisory and investment firm. He also holds a role as a managing director at Harrow Mark Partners, where he leverages his extensive background to invest intellectual and economic capital, helping individuals and corporations accelerate growth by optimizing their journey. Today, we will discuss his career journey, his recent book, The Freedom Framework, and how you can find freedom in your career by building a career that serves you and not the other way around. Hi, Jack. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's really a pleasure.
Yes, and for us too. So let's start with your background. First of all, what was your dream job when you were a child?
I think when I was a child, I wanted to be James Bond or a spy or a National Football League quarterback. None of those came to be. I just think at an early age, I wanted to be the leader of a team or a boss of a small business. I didn't have a desire to be at a big company, a big public company.
Are you still on time for James Bond? You never know.
But there's actually a theme there, because at least when I was 10 years old and saw Thunderball with Sean Connery, what I noticed wasn't the pretty girls that he was getting, but all the skills he had. He was a black belt. He scuba dived. He drove a fast car. He flew a plane. And I thought to myself, even at age 10, I want all those skills. And that becomes a theme later that shows up in the book, Freedom Frameworks.
Oh, that's amazing. And so what did you decide to study then? What is your educational background?
I went to Claremont Men's College and Stanford University, both West Coast, LA and San Francisco. I was what Claremont called a management engineer. When I was a freshman in college, somebody came and spoke and said, the definition of an engineer is a professional problem solver. Mm. And I was good in math, I was good in science, and I thought to myself, self, if I could learn a discipline to actually solve problems I didn't care about, when I got into the real world, I would have that discipline. So I have an undergraduate degree in management engineering from Claremont, and I have a master's degree in construction management from Stanford, and I have an undergraduate degree in civil engineering from Stanford. So I was in school a little more than 5 years and 3 degrees.
That's an amazing education. And so how did you start your professional life, or better, what was your first job?
My first job was working for a guy named Joe Kellogg. Joe Kellogg had a business called the Kellogg Corporation, where he was basically a expert witness company filled with consultants who did expert witness for litigation and construction problems. I hated it. I lasted about a year, and then I made the first great mistake of my life, going to work for my father in his small mortgage banking business. I was at Cone Financial for 35 years, and then I actually came to London and worked for a guy named Darren Sherlaw for a company, a consulting business called the Sherlaws Group. And I started Dark Knight Ventures, and then after a couple of years in London, moved back to Chicago, where I ended up helping some friends of mine from Deutsche Bank stand up a mortgage REIT called 3650 REIT. I was there for a couple of years. I set up their loan servicing, a Chicago office, their marketing and technology platform. And then I moved on and took a role as president of a small balance commercial real estate lender in Austin, Texas, called Strong Hill Capital. Was owned by Aramark Partners, and I fixed that business and scaled it, found my replacement, moved over to Aramark, and then I have been spending time at Aramark Partners and a residential asset manager by the name of Salutagrade. So I've been an owner-operator, I've been an investor, I've been a consultant, I've been a hired gun, but by and large, all of it's been in the commercial real estate finance space.
So you had an amazing career and you still have it, of course. And you tell us when you founded Dark Knight Ventures, but what inspired you to transition from your previous roles into founding and managing an advisory and investment firm?
Between 1998 and 2013, I recapitalized CoFinancial six times. The last time was with a private equity firm called Guggenheim Partners. And 2 weeks into the deal, the credit guy that it reported to wanted my job. And so I said, did you want me to leave? And he said, no, but you don't have to come to work if you don't want to. I said, that's not my style. So I went back into originating loans for the platform. And I got really bored doing what we call dumb debt. I started doing equity transactions, and then I was looking for opportunities to help corporations raise capital for their balance sheet. And I had this idea, what if I could be a mentor capitalist, pun intended, where I could find the next generation of real estate entrepreneur and bank them? So Dark Knight Ventures really started as an offshoot of an opportunity to finance new young professionals in the real estate business.
That's an amazing idea, and I guess also a very inspirational job to have.
It was fun. I've won some, I've lost many, and I've learned a lot of lessons along the way. But Dark Knight Ventures has become a private holding company for myself, and so it's investments in these little companies and where I get to do some consulting and or sit on company boards.
And so if we're going into more details, how can you help individuals and corporations accelerate growth through Dark Knight Ventures?
So I had a college professor who actually, there's only two things I learned in college. One was when you take a job, make sure that the responsibility is commensurate with your authority. And the second thing was, could make sure at the end of 43 years or 45 years or 35 years, that you really had 43 years of experience as opposed to 1 year of experience repeated 43 times. And so I took that to heart and have built kind of a broad, inch deep, mile wide kind of career. And I figured I had two things to offer people that were around experience. One was intellectual capital, and the other was economic capital. And I figured I've always had a superhero complex. My favorite superhero was Batman because he didn't have any superpowers. He had intellectual and economic resources that he used to create tools to help him help others find their way home. And I thought, what a great metaphor for a consulting business. And so basically what I'm really trying to do is to help somebody optimize their career journey, whether it's inside a company or as a company. And I'm trying to use skills, experiences, and relationships that I've developed over this 43-year period across a bunch of stuff to make that available to others. Consultants are hired to solve a particular problem. Coaches, you go to almost like a therapist who will help you ask the right questions or what it feels. But in my experience, mentors have been there before. They know what's around the corner. And so if somebody says, hey, Jack, what do you think? I have this idea for blank. I would say it's a great idea. I know it's a great idea, but I also know it's not going to work because I tried it three times and this is what I've learned. And so it's really in the trenches with the person, giving them frameworks and skills to help them chart a path for themselves and then optimize the journey. How can we do it better, faster, more effective?
Your recent book, The Freedom Framework, discusses finding freedom in one's career. What inspired you to write this book?
Thank you for asking that question. It's actually funny, but only to me. So for a number of years, I have been doing industry roundtables. People talk about being on a panel and you'll see three or five panelists. I have for decades been doing like 30 or 40 panelists in front of an audience and facilitating a discussion. And I had this idea at an industry association. What if we did it with young people? Like us old, white-haired, middle-aged guys controlling all this money, what do we know? Let's get the young generation. And the association didn't want to do it because they didn't think the audience was interested. And I called BS on it. And I said, give me a conference room, a hollow square, and I'll take 40 young professionals. And I did this five or six times and realized that no matter what, a third of their questions were always career related. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to sit down and see if I can inventory all these little sound bites and stupid human tricks and organize them into frameworks that then I could create a workbook, a playbook for these young professionals between 25 and 35 years old to see how I could help them grow their careers. And in fact, that's what I did. I literally did the roundtable in June of 23. And by July 1st, I had found a writing coach. And by June 30th, 24, I self-published on Amazon the book. Did it.
What a great journey. And so can you give us an overview of what are the key principles of the Freedom Framework?
So I guess there's a couple of things that are foundational. One is people ask me, what do you have to do to be successful in a career? And I say, you only have to do three things, but you have to do it every single day. You have to acquire skills, accumulate experiences, and develop relationships. And as part of those skill sets, I started to organize. Actually, the book has three sections that really talk about skill acquisition, experiences, and relationship building. But in the book, Alice in Wonderland, the rabbit says to Alice, if you don't know where you're going, any path will take you there. And so what I have found is people really don't understand how to begin with the end in mind. They don't understand how to create pull energy to lift them out of their current reality. And part of it is they've never taken the time to fantasize about the elements of an intended future. I'll give you a silly example. When you talk to people, they talk about jobs or job titles or how much money they're going to make. But those are really source activities. What they're really looking for is an outcome. And that, what are you going to do with the money? Are you going to buy more toys? Are you going to start a non-for-profit? Are you going to spend it on a bigger house? All of that stuff, I'm not sitting in judgment, but I talk about in the book, starting with an intended future. Can you fantasize a point in the future and close your eyes, and then open them and inventory all the elements around you? And then, with that in mind, then go back at a different time and assess your current reality. Silly example. If I wanted my own scuba diving shop, and I'd like it to be in Portugal, that would be a wonderful fantasy. But if my current reality is I could scuba dive but couldn't speak Portuguese, then I would know I would have to learn the language before I did that. And I know that's such an obvious example, but when I talk to people in their career, they don't actually think through how to connect their current reality to their intended future because they're thinking about it from their current reality. I have three kids. I have a young wife. She doesn't work. I live in New York. I need this amount of money. No wonder you can't fantasize. You're burdened by a current reality. And we go through that in the book to talk about creating pull energy that you can anchor on, pull yourself up from that kind of belief. That's obviously making oversimplified, but that contextually, people don't understand that context gives meaning to content. And the mother of all context is, why am I doing this? Am I working for this big organization so I can learn enough to go start my own business? Am I a leasing broker having to do cold calls in order to become a developer? If they can anchor on being a developer, then the drudgery along the way is something that they can make as part of their plan, if you will.
Yeah, definitely. You explained it so beautifully, and I definitely want to read your book now.
Thank you.
I think we all go through what you explained. Really, yeah, really interesting. We mentioned at the beginning that we want to talk about how we can build a career that serves us. So how can every individual begin to build a career that serves them rather than feeling like they serve their career?
So I think that you have to recognize there aren't any real shortcuts, right? So the first part of your career, your professional life, is really about learning. And the second phase is really about earning. And if you think about that and you are methodical about it, what you really need to do, in my view, is open your aperture. Talk to people who are like what you think you want to do. Not be afraid to have a fantasy. The wonderful thing about our dreams, and I talk about dreams and demons in the book, one of the things that's fun about dreams is there's no sell-by date. And you can course correct at any point in time. I guess the flip side of that is, so to begin, I think you need self-awareness. I think you have to be able to, whether it's journal or write things down, plans down, you really have to start to understand where you want to go. And with pull energy, you can begin. But I guess it gets to the reverse question, which is, what gets in the way? Why doesn't everyone do it? And I think there's a handful of things. I talk about this in the book, and I'm not a psychologist, but there are people that have, all of us, based on our life experiences, have what I call sub-basement things. They have a belief system that is subconscious, that they don't realize drives them or holds them back. If you think about it, the strongest impulse any human being really has is to prove themselves right about their belief system. So if you believed you were a victim or people were out to get you, then you would find yourself in a series of lawsuits or fractured relationships. If you had a more positive belief or could cough out the things that are holding you back to free you, then you can be more conscious about the things that you're doing. What I find is people think freedom will just arrive. There's a framework I teach in the book called red, blue, black. And red are the administrative things you have to do day to day, right? Maybe it's doing your laundry or grocery shopping. At work, it's filling out expense reports or going into HR meetings that you can't stand. And blue is your day job. But black are those things that you do today that will pay off in the future. And we talk in the book about making time in your week for that. So a lot of people don't build the career that they want because they're not making the time, 30 minutes every week, 1 hour every week, 90 minutes every weekend, to actually do something on their transition plan to actually get there. I find that the difference between the people who want it and the people who get it are discipline.
Yeah.
I also think that, so obviously there's a level of self-awareness. I'm also a big believer in cross-training. I think that too many people think about how they do their role in their job in terms of depth. And what they're not really understanding is there's an opportunity to deal with breadth by learning something new in another area that you can apply to the job that you're in. Silly example. Remember my James Bond story. I have a second degree black belt in a Tamiki-styled Aikido. Aikido is a conflict resolution martial art. There are no aggressive moves. Everything is reactive to somebody else. My son Wyatt was a theater major, and improv was part of what he did. Improv is about being on stage with other teammates and pushing the ball to them to help them do better. Wyatt's now a brand ambassador for a luxury watch and is traveling the world as a salesperson. And I think every day his success is a byproduct of his theater training. My ability to resolve, to diffuse a conflict in business is a byproduct not of me yelling at somebody, right? Like I'm going to hit them. But rather picking on energy and how can I move energy in different directions. Again, these are metaphors, but they're real examples, and I hope it's responsive.
Definitely. And in your opinion, what are some common pitfalls people encounter when they're trying to align their career with their personal values and goals?
One is they're not ready to sacrifice. Another is ego. I'm an old guy. When I started in the business careers, we talked about career ladders, right? And everyone's kind of mindset was climbing up. I think today, with Gen Z in particular, it looks more like a playground jungle gym. And so I think that you have opportunities to go sideways or to go down in order to move over to go up. And I've talked to young professionals where they're trapped. They didn't save any money, especially New Yorkers where it's expensive to live. They haven't got savings. They're chasing a dollar as opposed to investing in themselves to enhance their economic self-worth. And it's a somewhat of a metaphor, but it's a good analogy, is colleges sell their graduates a bill of goods. Come to my school and you'll get a job at a starting salary of blank. And the career development people will push that out. Starting salaries are blank. And when I talk to a young professional, I say to them, look, I don't care whether you're making $60,000 or $100,000 or $120,000 in your first job. What I think is important is when you're 30 and 35, are you making $300,000 or $500,000 or $1 million? That doesn't happen because you were on a corporate ladder. It happened because you invested in yourself and you built your self-worth and you created value for an employer or a customer who will pay you more. It's this short-sightedness of, I don't want to do the hard work. I don't want to take a step back. I need a certain title. I need a certain salary. And all of those are important. But if you're not willing to sacrifice and invest in yourself, who will? And I think those are pitfalls that people fall into.
So, while investing in ourselves, and then what other strategies would you recommend to optimize our career journey to achieve both personal and professional growth?
So by investing yourself in yourself, what you really want to do is to be able to be conscious of the value somebody else is getting from you, right? I don't think in particular a lot of young people think about that, but if value is equal what somebody will pay you have to understand that the most valuable asset you will ever own is yourself. That's your largest earning power. So if I'm in the investment world, if I wanted a 6% return on a $100 investment, I'm looking for something that would give me $6 in earnings. Think about that. If I was a human being who could earn every year $300,000 a year, somebody's going to pay me, is going to think I'm worth as an asset close to $5 million, because that $5 million at 6% creates $300,000 a year of earnings. It's a different mindset Then I got a job, I'm paying my bills, I have some savings, I'm going to go on a trip. So I think thinking bigger about creating value and how to value is something to do. I again, cross training is about investing in yourself, but I really think it's skill acquisition, it's different experiences, because I really think people in careers want to do business or associate with interesting people. Interesting people have broad and deep different experiences, and I wouldn't shy away from networking. Who's the old 6 days, 6 degrees of separation? I think that a lot of people think that there's a quick get rich strategy, or that they're just a rowboat in the ocean. But as I used to tell my kids, life is easy if you do the hard stuff, but it's hard if you only do the easy stuff. So my recommendation is invest in yourself and do some of the hard stuff, and don't look for shortcuts, but rather be smart about border protection. I talk in the book about time management and how to organize yourself. I do talk about conflict resolution. Just add more tools to your utility belt and create more leverage for yourself. That's really the opportunity, is who can help you? Who can help lift you or pull you up to your next station?
I'm loving this conversation, and is literally the time is flying. But we are reaching the end of this episode. We have a few more questions. First of all, what advice would you give to someone looking to find freedom in their career? If you could say just one thing.
Chance favors the prepared. I'd say to people, can you take an experience last Tuesday and apply it to an unrelated, unexpected experience next Thursday? That's being prepared for the opportunities that come before you that you can grab at.
And really, the last question, if you could give yourself a piece of advice, what would you say to your younger self?
I thought about this. I have two things. One is, I think that what I've learned only recently is there's a difference between taking on a problem prematurely and doing everything you can to avoid a problem in the future. And second is, as I look back in my career, even with confidence, there were so many times where others who, in their own disbelief or their own discomfort, created resistance for me. My ideas and my beliefs, I should have owned and taken more ownership of, and not be talked out of by my colleagues who, in hindsight, weren't saying no to my idea. They were saying no to the discomfort that my idea created for them. And I think that the people closest to us are guilty of the most resistance in our careers.
Thank you, Jack, so much for joining us today and sharing your inspirational career and story and wisdom with our listeners.
Thank you.
And a last message for our listeners, don't forget to subscribe to our channel. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review and tune in next week for a new inspirational episode of The Career Changers. Thank you. Hello, and welcome to a new episode of The Career Changers. Today, our guest is Jack Hem-Cohen, founder and CEO of Dark Knight Ventures, advisory and investment firm. He also holds a role as a managing director at Harrow Mark Partners, where he leverages his extensive background to invest intellectual and economic capital, helping individuals and corporations accelerate growth by optimizing their journey. Today, we will discuss his career journey, his recent book, The Freedom Framework, and how you can find freedom in your career by building a career that serves you and not the other way around. Hi, Jack. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's really a pleasure.
Yes, and for us too. So let's start with your background. First of all, what was your dream job when you were a child?
I think when I was a child, I wanted to be James Bond or a spy or a National Football League quarterback. None of those came to be. I just think at an early age, I wanted to be the leader of a team or a boss of a small business. I didn't have a desire to be at a big company, a big public company.
Are you still on time for James Bond? You never know.
But there's actually a theme there because at least when I was 10 years old and saw Thunderball with Sean Connery, what I noticed wasn't the pretty girls that he was getting, but all the skills he had. He was a black belt, he scuba dived, he drove a fast car, he flew a plane. And I thought to myself, even at age 10, I want all those skills. And that becomes a theme later that shows up in the book, Freedom Frameworks.
Oh, that's amazing. And so, what did you decide to study then? What is your educational background?
I went to Claremont Men's College and Stanford University, both West Coast, LA and San Francisco. I was what Claremont called a management engineer. When I was a freshman in college, somebody came and spoke and said, the definition of an engineer is a professional problem solver. And I was good in math, I was good in science, and I thought to myself, self, if I could learn a discipline to actually solve problems I didn't care about, when I got into the real world, I would have that discipline. So I have an undergraduate degree in management engineering from Claremont, and I have a master's degree in construction management from Stanford, and I have an undergraduate degree in civil engineering from Stanford. So I was in school a little more than 5 years and 3 degrees.
That's an amazing education. And so, how did you start your professional life, or better, what was your first job?
My first job was working for a guy named Joe Kellogg. Joe Kellogg had a business called the Kellogg Corporation, where he was basically a expert witness company filled with consultants who did expert witness for litigation and construction problems. I hated it. I lasted about a year, and then I made the first great mistake of my life going to work for my father in his small mortgage banking business. I was at Cohn Financial for 35 years, and then I actually came to London and worked for a guy named Darren Sherlaw for a company, a consulting business called the Sherlaws Group. And I started Dark Knight Ventures. And then after a couple of years in London, moved back to Chicago, where I ended up helping some friends of mine from Deutsche Bank stand up a mortgage REIT called 3650 REIT. I was there for a couple of years. I set up their loan servicing, a Chicago office, their marketing and technology platform. And then I moved on and took a role as president of a small balance commercial real estate lender in Austin, Texas, called Strong Hill Capital. Was owned by Aramark Partners, and I fixed that business and scaled it, found my replacement, moved over to Aramark, and then I have been spending time at Aramark Partners and a residential asset manager by the name of Saluda Grade. So I've been an owner-operator, I've been an investor, I've been a consultant, I've been a hired gun, but by and large, all of it's been in the commercial real estate finance space.
So you had an amazing career and you still have it, of course. And you tell us when you founded Dark Knight Ventures, but what inspired you to transition from your previous roles into founding and managing an advisory and investment firm?
Between 1998 and 2013, I recapitalized Cohn Financial 6 times. The last time was with a private equity firm called Guggenheim Partners. And 2 weeks into the deal, the credit guy that it reported to wanted my job. And so I said, "Did you want me to leave?" And he said, "No, but you don't have to come to work if you don't want to." I said, "That's not my style." So I went back into originating loans for the platform. And I got really bored doing what we call dumb debt. I started doing equity transactions, and then I was looking for opportunities to help corporations raise capital for their balance sheet. And I had this idea, what if I could be a mentor capitalist, pun intended, where I could find the next generation of real estate entrepreneur and bank them. So Dark Knight Ventures really started as an offshoot of an opportunity to finance new young professionals in the real estate business.
That's an amazing idea, and I guess also a very inspirational job to have.
It was fun. I've won some, I've lost many, and I've learned a lot of lessons along the way. But Dark Knight Ventures has become a private holding company for myself. And so it's investments in these little companies and where I get to do some consulting and or sit on company boards.
And so if we're going into more details, how can you help individuals and corporations accelerate growth through Dark Knight Ventures?
So I had a college professor who actually, there's only two things I learned in college. One was when you take a job, make sure that the responsibility is commensurate with your authority. And the second thing was could make sure at the end of 43 years or 45 years or 35 years that you really had 43 years of experience as opposed to 1 year of experience repeated 43 times. And so I took that to heart and have built kind of a broad, inch deep, mile wide kind of career. And I figured I had two things to offer people that were around experience. One was intellectual capital, and the other was economic capital. And I figured I've always had a superhero complex. My favorite superhero was Batman because he didn't have any superpowers. He had intellectual and economic resources that he used to create tools to help him help others find their way home. And I thought, what a great metaphor for a consulting business. And so basically what I'm really trying to do is to help somebody optimize their career journey, whether it's inside a company or as a company. And I'm trying to use skills, experiences, and relationships that I've developed over this 43-year period across a bunch of stuff to make that available to others. Consultants are hired to solve a particular problem. Coaches, you go to almost like a therapist who will help you ask the right questions or what it feels. But in my experience, mentors have been there before. They know what's around the corner. And so if somebody says, hey, Jack, what do you think? I have this idea for blank. I would say it's a great idea. I know it's a great idea, but I also know it's not going to work because I tried it three times and this is what I've learned. And so it's really in the trenches with the person, giving them frameworks and skills to help them chart a path for themselves and then optimize the journey. How can we do it better, faster, more effective?
Your recent book, The Freedom Framework, discusses finding freedom in one's career. What inspired you to write this book?
Thanks. Thank you for asking that question. It's actually funny, but only to me. So for a number of years, I have been doing industry roundtables. People talk about being on a panel and you'll see three or five panelists. I have for decades been doing like 30 or 40 panelists in front of an audience and facilitating a discussion. And I had this idea at an industry association, what if we did it with young people? Like us old, white-haired, middle-aged guys controlling all this money, what do we know? Let's get the young generation. And the association didn't want to do it because they didn't think the audience was interested. And I called BS on it. And I said, give me a conference room, a hollow square, and I'll take 40 young professionals. And I did this five or six times and realized that no matter what, a third of their questions were always career related. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to sit down and see if I can inventory all these little sound bites and stupid human tricks and organize them into frameworks that then I could create a workbook, a playbook for these young professionals between 25 and 35 years old to see how I could help them grow their careers. And in fact, That's what I did. I literally did the roundtable in June of 23, and by July 1st, I had found a writing coach, and by June 30th, 24, I self-published on Amazon the book. Did it.
What a great journey. And so can you give us an overview of what are the key principles of the freedom framework?
I guess there's a couple of things that are foundational. One is people ask me, what do you have to do to be successful in a career? And I say, you only have to do three things, but you have to do it every single day. You have to acquire skills, accumulate experiences, and develop relationships. And as part of those skill sets, I started to organize. Actually, the book has three sections that really talk about skill acquisition, experiences, and relationship building. But in the book Alice in Wonderland, the rabbit says to Alice, if you don't know where you're going, any path will take you there. And so what I have found is people really don't understand how to begin with the end in mind. They don't understand how to create pull energy to lift them out of their current reality. And part of it is they've never taken the time to fantasize about the elements of an intended future. I'll give you a silly example. When you talk to people, they talk about jobs or job titles or how much money they're going to make. But those are really source activities. What they're really looking for is an outcome. And that, what are you going to do with the money? Are you going to buy more toys? Are you going to start a non-for-profit? Are you going to spend it on a bigger house? All of that stuff, I'm not sitting in judgment, but I talk about in the book, starting with an intended future. Can you fantasize a point in the future and close your eyes and then open them and inventory all the elements around you? And then, with that in mind, then go back at a different time and assess your current reality. Silly example. If I wanted my own scuba diving shop and I'd like it to be in Portugal, that would be a wonderful fantasy. But if my current reality is I could scuba dive but couldn't speak Portuguese, then I would know I would have to learn the language before I did that. And I know that's such an obvious example, but when I talk to people in their career, they don't actually think through how to connect their current reality to their intended future because they're thinking about it from their current reality. I have three kids. I have a young wife. She doesn't work. I live in New York. I need this amount of money. No wonder you can't fantasize. You're burdened by a current reality. And we go through that in the book to talk about creating pull energy that you can anchor on, pull yourself up from that kind of belief. That's obviously making oversimplified, but that contextually, people don't understand that context gives meaning to content. And the mother of all context is, why am I doing this? Am I working for this big organization so I can learn enough to go start my own business? Am I a leasing broker having to do cold calls in order to become a developer? If they can anchor on being a developer, then the drudgery along the way is something that they can make as part of their plan, if you will.
Yeah, definitely. You explained it so beautifully, and I definitely want to read your book now.
Thank you.
Think we all go through what you explained. Really, yeah, really interesting. We mentioned at the beginning that we want to talk about how we can build a career that serves us. So how can every individual begin to build a career that serves them rather than feeling like they serve their career?
So I think that you have to recognize there aren't any real shortcuts, right? So the first part of your career, your professional life, is really about learning. And the second phase is really about earning. And if you think about that and you are methodical about it, what you really need to do, in my view, is open your aperture. Talk to people who are like what you think you want to do. Not be afraid to have a fantasy. The wonderful thing about our dreams, and I talk about dreams and demons in the book, one of the things that's fun about dreams is there's no sell-by date. And you can course correct at any point in time. I guess the flip side of that is, so to begin, I think you need self-awareness. I think you have to be able to, whether it's journal or write things down, plans down, you really have to start to understand where you want to go. And with pull energy, you can begin. But I guess it gets to the reverse question, which is what gets in the way? Why doesn't everyone do it? And I think there's a handful of things. I talk about this in the book, and I'm not a psychologist, but there are people that have, all of us, based on our life experiences, have what I call sub-basement things. They have a belief system that is subconscious, that they don't realize drives them or holds them back. If you think about it, the strongest impulse any human being really has is to prove themselves right about their belief system. So if you believed you were a victim or people were out to get you, then you would find yourself in a series of lawsuits or fractured relationships. If you had a more positive belief or could cough out the things that are holding you back to free you, then you can be more conscious about the things that you're doing. What I find is people think freedom will just arrive. There's a framework I teach in the book called red, blue, black. And red are the administrative things you have to do day to day, right? Maybe it's doing your laundry or grocery shopping. At work, it's filling out expense reports or going into HR meetings that you can't stand. And blue is your day job. But black are those things that you do today that will pay off in the future. And we talk in the book about making time in your week for that. So a lot of people don't build the career that they want because they're not making the time, 30 minutes every week, 1 hour every week, 90 minutes every weekend to actually do something on their transition plan to actually get there. I find that the difference between the people who want it and the people who get it are discipline.
Yeah.
I also think that, so obviously there's a level of self-awareness. I'm also a big believer in cross-training. I think that too many people think about how they do their role in their job in terms of depth. And what they're not really understanding is there's an opportunity to deal with breadth by learning something new in another area that you can apply to the job that you're in. Silly example. Remember my James Bond story. I have a second degree black belt in a Tomiki-styled Aikido. Aikido is a conflict resolution martial art. There are no aggressive moves. Everything is reactive to somebody else. My son Wyatt was a theater major, and improv was part of what he did. Improv is about being on stage with other teammates and pushing the ball to them to help them do better. Wyatt's now a brand ambassador for a luxury watch and is traveling the world as a salesperson. And I think every day his success is a byproduct of his theater training. My ability to resolve, to diffuse a conflict in business is a byproduct not of me yelling at somebody, right, like I'm going to hit them, but rather picking on energy and how can I move energy in different directions. Again, these are metaphors, but they're real examples, and I hope it's responsive.
Definitely. And in your opinion, what are some common pitfalls people encounter when they're trying to align their career with their personal values and goals?
One is they're not ready to sacrifice. Another is ego. I'm an old guy. When I started in the business, careers, we talked about career ladders, right? And everyone's kind of mindset was climbing up. I think today, with Gen Z in particular, it looks more like a playground jungle gym. And so I think that you have opportunities to go sideways or to go down in order to move over to go up. And I've talked to young professionals where they're trapped. They didn't save any money, especially New Yorkers where it's expensive to live. They haven't got savings. They're chasing a dollar as opposed to investing in themselves to enhance their economic self-worth. And it's a somewhat of a metaphor, but it's a good analogy, is colleges sell their graduates a bill of goods. Come to my school and you'll get a job at a starting salary of blank. And the career development people will push that out. Starting salaries are blank. And when I talk to a young professional, I say to them, look, I don't care whether you're making $60,000 or $100,000 or $120,000 in your first job. What I think is important is when you're 30 and 35, are you making $300,000 or $500,000 or $1 million? That doesn't happen because you were on a corporate ladder. It happened because you invested in yourself and you built your self-worth and you created value for an employer or a customer who will pay you more. It's this short-sightedness of, I don't want to do the hard work. I don't want to take a step back. I need a certain title. I need a certain salary. And all of those are important. But if you're not willing to sacrifice and invest in yourself, who will? And I think those are pitfalls that people fall into.
So, well, investing in ourselves, and then what other strategies would you recommend to optimize our career journey to achieve both personal and professional growth?
So by investing yourself in yourself, what you really want to do is to be able to be conscious of the value somebody else is getting from you, right? I don't think in particular a lot of young people think about that. But if value is equal what somebody will pay you, you have to understand that the most valuable asset you will ever own is yourself. That's your largest earning power. So if I'm in the investment world, if I wanted a 6% return on a $100 investment, I'm looking for something that would give me $6 in earnings. Think about that. If I was a human being who could earn every year $300,000 a year, somebody's going to pay me, is going to think I'm worth as an asset close to $5 million. Because that $5 million at 6% creates $300,000 a year of earnings. It's a different mindset than I got a job, I'm paying my bills, I have some savings, I'm going to go on a trip. So I think thinking bigger about creating value and how to value is something to do. Again, cross-training is about investing in yourself. But I really think it's skill acquisition. It's different experiences, because I really think people in careers want to do business or associate with interesting people. Interesting people have broad and deep different experiences. And I wouldn't shy away from networking. Who's the old 6 days, 6 degrees of separation? I think that a lot of people think that there's a quick get-rich strategy or that they're just a rowboat in the ocean. But as I used to tell my kids, life is easy if you do the hard stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's hard if you only do the easy stuff. So my recommendation is invest in yourself and do some of the hard stuff and don't look for shortcuts, but rather be smart about border protection. I talk in the book about time management and how to organize yourself. I do talk about conflict resolution. Just add more tools to your utility belt and create more leverage for yourself. That's really the opportunity, is who can help you? Who can help lift you or pull you up to your next station?
I'm loving this conversation, and is literally, the time is flying, but we are reaching the end of this episode. We have a few more questions. First of all, what advice would you give to someone looking to find freedom in their career, if you could say just one thing?
Chance favors the prepared. I'd say to people, can you take an experience last Tuesday and apply it to an unrelated, unexpected experience next Thursday? That's being prepared for the opportunities that come before you that you can grab at.
And really, the last question, if you could give yourself a piece of advice, what would you say to your younger self?
I thought about this. I have two things. One is, I think that what I've learned only recently is there's a difference between taking on a problem prematurely and doing everything you can to avoid a problem in the future. And second is, as I look back in my career, even with confidence, there were so many times where others who, in their own disbelief or their own discomfort, created resistance for me. My ideas and my beliefs, I should have owned and taken more ownership of, and not be talked out of by my colleagues who, in hindsight, weren't saying no to my idea. They were saying no to the discomfort that my idea created for them. And I think that the people closest to us are guilty of the most resistance in our careers.
Thank you, Jack, so much for joining us today and sharing your inspirational career and story and wisdom with our listeners.
Thank you.
And a last message for our listeners, don't forget to subscribe to our channel. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review and tune in next week for a new inspirational episode of The Career Changers. Thank you.